racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Welcome to the Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. I'm Bob Bupka. Proud to be here with Jay Randolph Jr., also known as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. And Jay, of course, our listeners want to talk about what transpired last week between Tiger and Phil. Let me just issue a brief statement as far as I'm concerned and my reaction. On Friday, I sat down expecting a feast, a big turkey dinner, and all I got was the stuffing. I mean, there was really no meat to what I watched. Your thoughts?
Well, I was one of the people that didn't think they were going to watch, and as we talked about it last week a little bit, and people at the course, Normandy, talked about it, they had me sucked in, and I plopped down the day before my 1999 or whatever it was and ordered it. I should have waited, obviously, because everybody got it for free. As I have said,
I don't want to interrupt, but in case there's people listening, all you have to do is make contact with whoever you paid. You will get a refund.
Well, and that's what I was planning to do, but I also will tell you that I've spent $4 an hour on a lot worse. I mean, it was a test balloon. And we almost talked about this when the rhetoric started after the Masters, that they tossed it out there to see what kind of interest it was. And I guess they felt like there was enough interest. And then they made it more secure during the Ryder Cup and all that, and it happened. The golf wasn't great. We're going to talk more about it, the production, a lot of different aspects. I'm not sure where we go here from this point on as it relates to this type of situation.
Well, first I thought it was a very successful lobbying campaign by the Golf Broadcasters Union, because I tallied up 9 announcers for 2 players. I mean, that's a pretty good job by the union, creating some jobs. 9 announcers.
Does that include Natalie Gulbis?
Well, that included her brief appearance, and then apparently somebody got one of those big hooks, and she fell in one of those trap doors out there in Las Vegas because she disappeared. And the winner,
I thought maybe she checked into the witness protection program.
Yeah, well, and ironically enough, the number one golf announcer award, from my judging, went to Charles Barkley, who had the line of the night when he said, "America, the golf you're watching is crappy. I can play better than those guys." We're going to talk more about it. But wait, Jay, let's hear what Tiger had to say first.
I think we've got some positive feedback overall. I mean, there's some things in which we could make it better for the viewer. But I think a lot of people turned in and tried to watch and then ended up watching. But I think that overall the experience was positive. Obviously, there's some things that we can do, and as far as interaction and as far as play, I wish we both would have played better. But neither one of us putted well that day, and there were some tough hole locations out there. And so that maybe going forward, just don't quite have, you know, the green so fast or the pin so difficult. But also, as short as the golf course was playing, we should have made at least 7-8 birdies apiece, but we just did not.
Well, I think that I heard a Freudian slip in Tiger's opening sentence. He said a lot of people turned in. Yeah, maybe they went to bed. I mean, he meant to say tuned in, but he said turned in. And they did. They made the hole so short. I guess what he wants is he wants to play that sudden death hole that they created, 93 yards. Just play that 18 times. Make sure there's no wind. Put up side walls so there's no wind affecting the ball. It was horrible. You know, you and I, we love golf more than anybody. I mean, it was flat out horrible. And I was disgusted over the fact when Phil very casually said, you just got in this morning. Yeah, I was with Freddie last night. He was in Seattle, Washington, worried about getting ready to play the match. and then flies in that morning. Come on. Horrible. Horrible, horrible.
Well, I think we go back to the question that you and I posed when this first was floated out there. And the question kept going back to why. You know, why do we need this? Why do these two guys need this? And, you know, in the end, they tried to make a made-for-TV event where the players did not perform. In a couple of aspects, I think, you know, early on, it seemed like the talk between them was contrived. Then they got to the middle of the round and they were having some banter and it was enjoyable. And you saw Phil talking with our buddy Mark Russell and learning the fact that USGA officials, they were adding USGA officials at the first four events of 2019 because of all the rules changes. So you got a little bit of that. And then they got to about 14 or 15. And they hardly talked to each other. So not only was the play not good, you had the aspect of the banter between the two, especially toward the end, wasn't there. You had the overcrowded announcer situation. You didn't have anybody. If they could have gotten a guy like, hell, Michael Jordan or even Samuel L. Jackson and had them walking with the guys, it maybe made it easier for them. I don't know. I just know that it was not necessarily pleasing to the viewer, and I know it wasn't pleasing to Bob.
Well, the one point you just brought up, one of the you know, selling points of this match, you're going to be able to hear Tiger and Phil talking while they're playing. So why would Mark Russell take this opportunity to explain what's going to happen on the PGA Tour next year as far as the PGA Tour is concerned? I mean, I was amazed that they were even there. Then I found out that the Tour had given explicit instructions. You guys, you can't use the word bet. Oh, no. We don't want that word bet. You got to say challenge, okay?
Yep.
Like bet is a three-letter bad word or something. I mean, they're
right.
talking about the odds at the MGM. They're talking about this odds, that odds, but you can't say the word bet. I mean, so I guess anybody going into the sports book at the MGM, if they wanted some action on this match, they had to go to the counter and say, I want to lay down a challenge of a C-note here on Tiger Woods. And the teller says, you mean you want to bet? No, don't say that word, bet. I said challenge because otherwise we get in trouble. Come on. Who's kidding? Who are you?
You can say it at the MGM, but you can't say it at Pontevedra. And we broke the story last week in relation to them selling their or partnering with all of their statistical information with the IMG sports betting aspect. So, I mean, it's double talk. And I think a lot of people who watched for the gambling aspect, and as we talked about, Bob, it wasn't that $9 million was at stake. It was the fact that these guys were playing match play and against each other. And you had an opportunity if you wanted to bet hole by hole and do different things. And, you know, it didn't work the way in which it could have. And, you know, I don't know whether that sends a message that this really isn't needed or where we go next. I mean, do they try and float? I mean, you cannot get to the two, they're the two biggest golf stars over the last 25 years. And I don't think anybody can, you know, take either one of them's place as it relates to the popularity in golf and outside of golf.
Yeah, but even along those lines, Jay, now, are you going to want to watch Michael Jordan play Bill Russell in a basketball game and have the announcers say, well, I tell you what, if anybody could blow around this guy, it would be Michael Jordan. But that was 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I mean, you know, Phil Mickelson hits it into a bunker. Oh, you want nobody but him playing it? You know, come on. I don't know. Ernie Johnson is a highly rated NBA guy for TNT, does great work. I admire his work. I enjoy his work, but that's basketball. He had no business. It's like he's, able to guide a cruise liner, and they put him in a 747. You know, it just didn't work. Along those lines, we got to move on because I would talk for an hour. It is anticipated now. There's going to be some future episodes. Maybe the only one I'd like to see right now would be Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed. And now that would get my interest.
Well, and the question is, we know it would get Patrick's interest. Would it get Jordan Spieth's interest? And coupled with that, would it get the public? And that's the difference that you had in the potential of a Phil Tiger matchup was amongst the audience. They're the people. They were looking for the people that plop down on Sunday and watch Augusta or maybe watch the majors. They're not looking. They weren't looking for the guy that gets excited to watch, you know, David Toms back when he won the Memphis Classic. I mean, it just, and that's why I think that, you know, you could try Jordan and Reed. Somebody said, how about Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka? Well, you better have the Ringling Brothers Circus out there because those two guys will bore you to death. Now, they hit it unbelievable, but can you imagine the two of them talking to each other?
Well, they wouldn't need mics. They wouldn't need mics.
No, they wouldn't need mics because they wouldn't be saying anything. I mean, it just, I don't think, I mean, I may be wrong. Maybe the money was that good or the opportunity for the money after the pay-per-view debacle is to the point where they test it again. But I don't think this is the wave of the future.
You know, Jay, I felt some compassion. And just clear up a point with, Reed and Jordan and maybe Johnson and Koepka. Any of the chatter we've heard, it would always still have to involve Tiger and Phil. So I don't know, about that type of stuff. And because I went back to that, now I forgot what I was going to say, which is, happened.
Well, and the other thing, Bob. The other thing about it is Capital One and Audi and the people that will make the decisions whether this goes further are the people that had to put up the money. I mean, that's what, if it made sense, then fine. But if it doesn't, then I don't think we'll see it very often.
Jay, you're at Normandy. You get a lot of friendly wages out there. $5 mass or $10 mass or whatever the case may be. Here they are playing supposedly, you alluded to this point, for $9 million and a guy's got a 5-foot putt and the other guy says, yeah, go ahead, that's good. Now, at Normandy, I guess you if the ball was hanging over the lip, they probably would say, well, why don't you just knock it in? Not, playing for a lot of money and say to a guy 5-footer, you've played golf for money your whole life. I've played for money my whole life. I never got a 5-footer once in my entire career. Not by my best friend, not by my worst enemy. In a match for money, they don't give 5-footers. $9 million? Yeah, pick it up. That's good. I mean, it was surreal. The whole thing, I think that's the best way. Now, What was the gallery? That's another interesting thing. The gallery was strictly high rollers from the MGM. All high rollers from the MGM. How much golf did they watch? Most of the time, they were in the bar having drinks and enjoying themselves. On a couple of holes, they would come out. When they did come out, the camera was instructed, please show it like it's crowded. It was smoke and mirrors from the opening tee off to the final putt on. And then, oh, wait, how about this one, Jay? How about this really? Wait a minute, there's going to be a slight delay in starting the playoff here because the green staff is going out and they're going to have to cut a new hole on that 18th green. We had to stand by and watch the green staff cut a new hole. Golly, Jay, help me, help me.
Well, it was good for the golf course superintendents of America who are friends and people got to see how a hole is cut. The other thing, Bob, they were superintendents and golf course owners and operators across America just going, you got to be kidding, when they were hitting the shots off the putting green. The 93-yard shot was off a putting green. So you can think about a bunch of yahoos sitting around paid their $20 going, huh, I wonder what it's like to hit off a putting green. We don't need that either. I mean, let's get a tee.
And I can't wait to see him because he's been a good friend for a long time. You referenced it as we started talking about this. We broke, actually, that ShotLink is going to be for sale to assist bettors in making their wages on the PGA Tour. That's kind of, at this point, hush, hush. So what do we have? We have the head of ShotLink, a great guy, was a quarterback at Lafayette. I've known him. I've had a lot of meals with him. He's a meticulous dresser. He's the best dressed employee at the PGA Tour, and he was out there. Now you might think on the surface he'd be out there and want to be low key. Well, he had this bright red sweater. The next step up would have been a neon sign saying Don Wallace. I mean, because he was in Vegas, home in neon. I figured maybe that would be. So he certainly wasn't looking to be inconspicuous. I mean, I could go on and on and on.
Well, early on, Bob, you saw a bunch of Steinberg with Tiger. And then at one point I'm watching and they're showing, I mean, there's no gallery, as you said. And there's a guy standing alone by a tree, and it was Steve Loy. For folks that don't know, those are the agents of the two players.
Who negotiated a pretty good deal. That's why I go back to that five-footer. They were being compensated. Don't worry about that extra money. Yeah, that putt's good. I don't know.
I don't want to win that this way.
yeah, that's what he. Don't. Yeah, that was another putt. Actually, that was another putt. Pick that up, Tiger. I don't want to win this way. He's saying, I know there's a damn good chance you could miss this putt, but that would unsweeten my victory. So rather than win that way, you pick it up, Tiger. You don't. You don't have enough courage to knock that putt in. I mean, one shot saved it immensely, obviously. The chip in by Tiger on 17. I mean, that was the only shot of note during the entire thing. The best news, everybody is getting their money back. I mean, and the final critique, I leave you with this, Jay. Janice Self, our executive producer of the Grow Room, was so fired up about this match. She kept preaching to me, we're going to get it, we're going to get it, we're going to get it. So we got it. Half hour into the match, I look over, she's sound asleep. Sound asleep. Watching the match. Sound asleep. We got to move on.
You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. Heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, Audio Boom, Spotify, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. Or you could just ask your smart speaker, Alexa, to play The Grill Room Golf Show and you'll be connected. Time for a short break, and when we return, he's ready to roar, the mouth that roars, Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of MorningRead.com. I can only imagine what Alex has to say on the Tiger and Phil match.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. The facility uses a unique dynamic pricing structure that golfers seem to love. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Welcome back to The Grill Room.
Early in the show, Jay and I had an opportunity to discuss the match. We're bringing in somebody now that probably is going to have a little different, keener perspective on Tiger Woods versus Phil Mickelson. He's Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of The Morning Read, golf's fastest growing source for news. Alex, thanks for joining us. All right, buddy, fire away. What were your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I don't think we should call it the match. I think it should be match, because the indicates that it's like something really, really special. It was not. It was less than special. Phil Mickelson kind of got it, kind of understood what the whole deal was about. Tiger Woods moping around for 18 holes, or I guess it's more 22 holes, was not really into it. In fact, he didn't even show up, Bob, until the morning of. So where Phil Mickelson was spending all this time looking at the golf course and examining it and going through all its paces, Tiger Woods decided he'd spend the time with Fred Couples in Seattle, Washington instead. So obviously didn't take too much, didn't take too much time or preparation or concern about what was going to happen. I think it's the precursor to what golf is going to be like in the future, but it's a long way away from being anything other than the precursor.
You know, the lack of information surrounding this match, I mean, nobody really knows, you know, does Phil get that entire $9 million because he came out on top? Is some of that supposed to go to charity? How many people actually paid to watch the televised event and now they're getting their money back because of technical difficulties? But the lack of information about the massive amount of money that, you know, supposedly was only going to go to one guy, to me, seems rather perplexing.
Well, where do you start? How involved the tour was in determining what was going to happen during the match, that was, I prized. That all started to filter out afterwards. Their ability to be able to decide, you know, how much money could be put on side bets, how big the side bets could be, so forth and so on. I don't know why the tour would have anything to do with that, but they did. The $9 million part, it always seemed to be a little crazy that, really? I mean, is Tiger Woods really going to write a check for $600,000 or whatever it was in the side bets that he lost and then not make anything for being at the match? Again, that doesn't seem plausible. I'm sure there had to be a minimum that we're unaware of for the person that didn't win. I do believe that Phil Mickelson will keep and does get the $9 million. What he decides to do with it is really is up to him. It has nothing to do with anybody else. I would assume that he'll probably, you know, donate some of it. But if in fact the $9 million, if part of it was going to be donated to charity, considering all the press that they got, all the negative press that they got about this, you would have thought that they would have mentioned that out of the $9 million, X amount would have gone to charity. That's why I don't believe any of it is going to charity, at least not through the event itself. But if Phil wants to give money to charity, he can. So, I mean, all in all, there is a lot of, there is no transparency in what was happening either before, during, or after the match. We don't even know how many people were watching it. We don't know, how many people are getting refunded. We don't know any of that stuff. And I don't think we're ever going to really know, because I don't think anybody wants to tell. They never want to tell the negative stuff. They only want to tell the positive stuff. And the positive was is that Phil Mickelson won $9 million and won a belt that didn't fit him because it was fit for Tiger Woods instead of Phil Mickelson. That's pretty much the answer to the question.
A couple of things before I let you go. We're talking with Alex Maselli, founder, publisher of Morning Read. Number one, it seemed like Tiger, from reliable sources that were at the match in person, was having a great deal of difficulty with his back. Do you think this is something new, or is he, did he play too much golf last year? Or is the back going to be a factor this year?
You know, those are all rumors, but what I will say is seeing him at the Ryder Cup, then discussing with certain players that were at the Ryder Cup in Turkey, and hearing things about the Tour Championship, Tiger Woods is taking, it seems to be taking, a lot of medication to get through 18 holes. And I don't think that's not a positive. I think it's clear that the back issue is still there to some extent. I don't believe he can play a 72-hole tournament without medication. I don't believe that his back is going to hold up. I think it's pretty clear that that is a problem. He found a way to get around 72 holes at East Lake, but he couldn't find a way to get through even 18 holes, I didn't think, at the Ryder Cup. And I think we'll see more this week in the Bahamas to see how he fares there. But I think all in all, he cannot play a full schedule or anything close to what he used to consider a full schedule. And I think at some point his back will be a problem. And then the question is, does he go back to painkillers and everything else? Or does he finally decide to, put the clubs aside and decide that he wants to have a life where he's not in pain? Because it was pretty clear, I think, that before he started playing golf again, after the surgery, eventually he was no longer in pain. So don't you think that you'd rather not be in pain? It's odd, Bobby. I saw a video clip of a press conference with Sandy Koufax when he was retiring at, 30, whatever, very young to retire. And he talked about the fact that he did not want to live his life without one arm, which is what was going to happen if he continued to pitch. And that was why he retired. So the question is did Tiger Woods make that decision that he wants to have a life, the rest of his life, with a back that he can walk around with and play casual golf with and spend time with his kids with, but he's going to have a chronic issue that he's never going to be able to deal with without medication and painkillers?
All right, before we let Alex go, one quick peek into the Maselli crystal ball. Tiger win a major in 2019 or does not win a major?
No, doesn't win a major. He's not going to win a major again. I still stick by that. The fact that he won a limited field event at East Lake was great, but that's exactly what it is. That's a little different than showing up when you got to play against 156 guys, except with the exception of the Masters. And even the Masters, he has shown that he is incapable since the changes to be able to handle that golf course and win.
Alex Maselli, he's the man. He's the founder. He's the publisher of Morning Read.
Time for another short break, and coming up, we'll hear Bob's conversation with Barney Adams of Tight Lies and Adams Golf, a legendary guy and legendary club maker, and he's got a new product on the market that might just help your putter.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
The Capital of Villas Maui is the official hotel partner of the Grill Room Golf Show during the Century Tournament of Champions, held each January at the Plantation Course. Yes, I know it's snowing in some parts of the U.S. Yes, I know it's cold and miserable. And yes, we thought you might like to hear from General Manager Bill Reese on the advantages of choosing Kapalua Villas Maui for your next vacation.
We've got the weather, we've got the beach, we've got the golf course, we've got the palm trees, we have properties facing the golf course, if that's your cup of tea, where you can actually watch the golfers on the fairway. We have properties in the ridge, which is high on the hill, so you can get a very panoramic ocean view of Molokai and the tropical environment. And also we have the bay villas, which are right down by the Onaloa Bay, which is oceanfront. fully equipped kitchens in every condo, washer, dryer, and there is a refrigerator, freezer, so you can have that ice cream at midnight without having to go out. We've got the friendly people in the Aloha. There's not much more you could ask for.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Joining us now, a legendary name in the world of golf, Barney Adams, and always associated with the leading edge in technology. And Barney, I want to thank you for taking part in this. I know we have a new exciting product to talk about, but I first want to say that more often than not, in any conversations concerning Barney Adams, it always comes up that you're a leading proponent of growing the game. And to me, that's about as high a compliment as anybody in the golf business could ever receive. I know it's a special place in your heart.
Yeah, it, ironically, the PGA of America had their, or a meeting anyway, here where I am in California. And I know the new incoming president for the PGA of America, and I'd sent him an email, and I said, look, you know, I'm not looking for any job or anything like that, but if part of your agenda is going to be growing the game, and if there's anything I can do to help, just yell at me. And I ended up meeting with one of his people, and, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, everybody was positive, but it, you know, that's just the beginning. So, yeah, it's in my mind, it's an ongoing and probably will be an ongoing thing.
Yeah, it really is. If somebody were to ask you, and I don't want to get off topic here, but I want to take advantage of your expertise, could you isolate, in your opinion, the single biggest obstacle that's in the way of more people playing golf, or is it several fronts that have to be concerned with?
Well, I'm sure there's several, and if you ask, which I have done, you'll get, you know, half a dozen responses, and I only concentrate on the area where, you know, it's in my bailiwick, not my bailiwick, but at least something that I've had experience with, and that is, I think, this is going to sound like a weird statement, but I tell people golf, they try and sell golf as being fun. Golf is not fun. Golf is hard. The fun in golf comes from accomplishing something in a very difficult environment. And that's almost an aphrodisiac. That's so much fun. It's terrific. If you ask any golfer, and I've run this experiment several times, the last round you play, tell me what the best shot you hit was. And without question, they can always remember, whether it's a putt or an iron shot or a wood shot or whatever it is. It's that sense of accomplishment on the golf course. And I want to see courses set up, not super easy, not ridiculous, but I want to see courses set up to give players the chance to have that enjoyment of you know, a birdie putt or making a birdie or knocking it on in two or whatever it is. But don't make the game any harder than it has to be.
Well, that's certainly a very enlightening comment. I'll be honest, I have not heard that before, but I agree with it 100%. And now the latest thing in the world of Barney Adams, I looked at the product that you've come up with, and it excited me because I've witnessed changes in golf equipment over the years, from the golf ball to the driver to the shafts of the driver to you know, the faces of irons to everything, but never once any improvement on the putter shaft. And now you have come up with something that I think is, you know, fantastic, and it's called the Stability Putter Shaft. Tell us a little about how the genesis for this came about and some of the benefits that a golfer will obtain by having this shaft in his putter.
Sure. And I will lead off by saying that most people, when I talk to them about this, they kind of roll their eyes and look the other way, to be honest with you. You know, we take putter shafts for granted, but steel putter shafts have been around since, you know, dirt, and it's just something that's there. And I was the same way, quite frankly, until I we were looking at some data that we're testing putting environment, and I'll give you the conclusion because it took us quite a while to get there. But over the years, putter heads have gotten heavier, and the shafts have stayed the same. And what happens during the stroke is that the motion, when it's applied to the shaft, the head is enough heavier that it causes the shaft to, we call it oscillate, or like a shimmy almost, but just like a quiver, just a slight amount of motion. Well, when that happens, the putter head is doing the same thing because it's attached. So the net result is that at the moment of impact, when the putter head strikes the ball, the putter head is never exactly square. It's just a fraction off, or more than a fraction off. Enough, for example, that say you line up a 15-foot putt, and this is to, you know, win the match, to beat your friend, or whatever it is. It's an important putt, and you feel confident. You just feel good about it, and you line it up, and you know it's a good stroke, and it's a left-edge putt, and you miss it to the left. It's entirely possible, if not probable, in that situation, that you did everything right and the shaft caused the putt to miss to the left, because the shaft caused the putter head to be slightly to the left at impact, and it was just enough for you to miss the putt, just hanging on the left edge, so to speak. Our shaft, when we learned all of this, we say, well, how are you going to stop that? Well, first off, the shaft itself had to feel the same as a regular putter shaft. You couldn't introduce something that's so drastically different that golfers relate to it, and they have to learn how to use it and so on. In other words, the adjustment to the shaft becomes greater than the problem in the first place, so it isn't worth it. So it had to be something that was felt exactly like their normal steel shaft, and our shaft weighs within 1.2 grams of a steel shaft. And if you look at it, it's a graphite tube, and I won't go into all the detail, but it's a specially prepared graphite tube. Inside, at the point where this oscillation or shimmy might occur, there's a spacer. And that spacer absorbs the vibration. The net result is that the putter head always comes back to the ball square. And as a golfer, that's what you want. You know, all that other stuff is fine, but what you really want is the putter head to come back to the ball square. And you notice it, you know, and listen, I want to be very clear here. You don't go out and make everything. This is golf. This is not, you know, oh my God, if you buy this shaft, you're going to make 6 more putts per round and blah, 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 that kind of stuff. Absolutely not true. Will you make more putts over the long haul? Absolutely. What you will notice is your distance control is much better because you're getting solid hits all the time. So it's definitely better, but I won't try and pretend that it's some kind of a miracle thing, because that's not golf. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah, you can never buy a golf game in the pro shop. Now, your shaft that you've come up with, this stability shaft, Barney, can I use my existing putter head? Would be the first question that anybody would ask.
Sure. And the answer is absolutely. We don't care what your putter head is. The shaft can fit any putter.
And I understand very reasonably priced, under $200. You can take advantage of the latest technology. And I appreciate your candor by admitting that, no, you're not going to make 6 to 10 more putts per round. But in reality, I don't think there's anybody out there that would not be happy with making one putt more per round.
Yeah, and in our testing, which has been kind of a positive thing, we have about, it varies, but let's say 6 or 7 of the younger players on tour, and they're more willing to try something rather than the established guys. But every single tour player who has putted with a putter, we track their stats against the tour statistics. Every single one of them has putted better, without fail. And that's pretty encouraging. But secondly, when we've tested people, amateurs, this is not something for just for pros, amateurs putt better, women putt better. And that's that's good. That's universal.
A pleasure talking with you. You're truly one of the legends in the game. And boy, oh boy, if we can just help some people out to make more putts, it would be a job well done. Barney Adams, thank you for your time.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.